guys. What's going on?
Yep. Happy holidays.
I mean, you know.
It's coming.
I know. I can't believe it.
Yep.
It's only 5 days away. I'm not ready. I'm never ready for anything, though.
Be all right.
I guess.
Get some of that eggnog.
I don't really like eggnog all that much.
I'm going to drink it all.
Well, yeah, that's why. Well, you like it. Yeah, you can get it.
I'll drink all of it.
I want some hot chocolate with some whipped cream in it and a candy cane. That's all I want.
Yeah.
And my MST episodes.
Candy, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And it's got to have whipped cream in it, too.
Okay. I got whipped cream. I got everything for chocolate milk, too.
I don't think we have no candy canes, though. I have to go to Dollar Store.
Yeah, they got them over there.
They got them at Dollar General.
Yeah.
We actually got some. You got some good chocolate candy bars over there the other day.
Yeah.
They were real big, like real big ones. I guess that was like the Dollar General version of.
Of like Garibaldi.
Ghirardelli, the deluxe one. They were like sea salt and caramel or something
that. They come in a box. They're not quite as soft. They're kind of crunchy, but.
That's okay.
You know, it's not
for a dollar. That's pretty goddamn good.
Big old
for a big huge chocolate bar with caramel and salt in it.
Yeah, wrapped in a cardboard box.
My cheap ass. I'm not proud. Yeah, I'll eat that shit all day long.
Yeah.
Ben says for Christmas you can have diabetes. Yeah, probably. Yeah. It does run in my family. I probably should be careful.
Okay, so Hateful Eight, we watched it.
This is also kind of a Christmas movie.
Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah, doesn't it take place like right around Christmas time? I think it does, actually. I think they mentioned it.
So we've been doing, what's his name?
Quentin
Tarantino's movies. And I remember seeing bits of this, but this is the first time I've seen it from the complete movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, too. I thought that I'd seen the whole thing all the way through, but watching it again, I don't think I ever did. Right. I thought I just like saw parts of it.
Yeah.
But I never, like, sat through the whole thing.
We had two options that they had on there. They had the theatrical release, and they had another one. There was 5 episodes, I think.
Well, they did that one. I looked it up later. Yeah. They did that in 2019 for Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So they essentially just re-edited it and, put some stuff back in it that was in there. Because I guess the cut that we watched was just the theatrical version, which was like 2 hours and 47 minutes or something. Now he also did a theatrical version that was 3 hours and 2 minutes, but the one that's on Netflix, I guess it's been re-edited and had some footage edited back in it, and they did it like four or five episodes, right? That were at least 54 minutes long, something like that. We were gonna watch that, but then I was like, "Holy shit! It'll be like 1 a.m. before it's." And I was like, "I'll fall asleep before it's over." So we just watched the theatrical cut.
And that wasn't the cut that people had asked us to review when they're talking about this movie. When we're talking about this movie, they're usually talking about the theatrical cut. So maybe we'll see the other one later.
Yeah.
This is the theatrical cut, the short version. It's good. I liked it.
Just relatively short. It's still pretty long, but you know what I mean?
2.5 hours long. But I was impressed with the movie. This is definitely one of his better ones. I'd probably put it up there with, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Pulp Fiction. It's very different from Pulp Fiction. He's definitely doing a spaghetti western. Even with the score, he's got a good score.
God damn, the score for this is so good.
Yep, it's filmed outside in real snow.
Yeah, it's shot in Colorado, actually. Okay. It's supposed to be Wyoming, but they shot it in Colorado.
Yeah.
Telluride.
Costumes are good, set's good, it's all taking place in one place, but it's a good spaghetti western done Tarantino style. And overall, the movie is a bromance. Basically, between three dudes that fucking have a lot of differences, they can't stand each other.
That's a bromance.
A bounty hunter who's kind of neutral. A black union major who basically got run out as a coward, and he lies some. And then a son of a Confederate commander who also fought on a Confederacy, white guy. He's played by the dude that played the psycho in fucking Predators, which
dude's in a bunch of stuff.
This is the only other movie I've seen him in. He did a great job in this.
He's in a lot of kind of like prestige TV. He was on that show Justified. I think that's probably what he's best known for. He's in like a bunch of stuff.
So Crussell plays the bounty hunter, and fucking Samuel L. Jackson plays the the major, the union, the ex union,
who is
major.
Also a bounty hunter.
Right? Yeah, he's a bounty hunter too. And they can't stand each other, but in the end, they're there for each other. They resolve their differences and fucking they're all kind of equally honorable / dishonorable, and they deliver frontier justice. In the end, that's what it's about. Frontier justice. And they're going to fucking hang this chick who's a prisoner. And she's a gang leader. And she's good at it, too.
She got an Oscar for this.
Yeah.
Best supporting.
She doesn't say a whole lot in the edit that we saw, but she does a lot of good physical acting. Like, she just... beat up and dirty looking and
I mean she
wicked.
Gets punched in the face
they're
a
beating
lot.
Her up a lot
in this movie.
she's real defiant and then sometimes she just tries to be cute as hell, like, you know, when it's just funny. Now he's got her on a damn chain, and then in the end when she finally kind of gets free a little bit because her brother tries to come to rescue her, and she starts actually having a bigger active role in the movie, you find out fucking how evil she is, you know. Pretty damn evil. Smart. But it's a good flick. It takes a while for it to unfold. Bruce Dern's in it. Plays a Confederate general. And fucking Samuel Jackson tells him the story about how he made his son suck his dick.
That's like the best part of the movie. That's the best part of the whole movie. Samuel L. Jackson, can I just say, fucking steals this movie. Well, he kind of steals every movie that he's in. That's just because he's just so awesome. Yeah. But, I mean, that's really saying something. An ensemble cast as amazing as this one. Like, he just picks up this movie and runs the fuck away with it. And that's, like, the best scene.
Yeah, Jackson's reminded me of my friend Will in this. I was like, man, it's like Will.
Yeah, we have a friend that looks a lot like that.
This big, tall, ex-army black guy who's in the goth scene with me. And I got a good video of him, me and him on the street, and I'm fucking loaded. And he's got his arm around me trying to talk sense into me or something. He's trying to complete my sentences because I'm just so fucked up.
And he's walking me
through it. Yeah, he's walking me through
it. I remember that video. That was pretty fucking funny.
Yeah, I'm barely holding it together.
He might have been drunk too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, Will can drink as much as I can. Just, you know, he's bigger. So he can kind of hold it together, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't usually get like real.
No, I just start getting quiet.
Yeah.
When I get real loaded, I can't talk. So other people, my friends, have to talk for me. I'm just gonna, and Will's like Samuel L. Jackson. He's fucking funny. Big old talk, looks like him too. And in this movie,
well, yeah, there was a scene in here. It didn't really occur to me until there was one scene where he was like talking and they showed his face. I was like, holy shit, that looks just like Will.
Yeah.
And like, well, even like his facial expressions and stuff like that. It was like super funny.
Yeah, his wife / girlfriend. I don't think they got married, did they?
Not yet. I don't think they got married yet.
His wife / girlfriend is a army captain or major. She's still active. She's in she's medical. I think she's like a type of doctor. We ought to have him over one time. He'd be a good guest on the show.
He probably would be, yeah.
Yeah, he's getting drunk. He's fucking funny.
He's very entertaining.
He'll show up in his damn kilt.
Yeah.
He would tell you over and over again how Scottish American he is. I just give it to him. I go, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He likes bagpipe music and shit. But, So anyway, it's a good movie. It's a good Western. It's a very good Western. It does go a little Tarantino on you, but that's why you're watching this movie.
I mean, that's kind of his thing.
You know he's
going
to do that. He's homaging some Sergio Leone every now and then, especially with the score. So he knew what to do. I mean, really what made a good Western was the score. And Sergio Leone really introduced the idea of a damn score to a Western movie, because that's what makes a Western feel important. And go back and listen to Good and the Bad and the Ugly and all the Man with No Name series, or I guess it's a trilogy. And those movies feel very important, and it's because of the score.
Yeah, because they're epic.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why Ennio Morricone does the score for this. This was, I think, this was the last score he did before he died. He only died a couple years ago.
So I'm calling it. See, I didn't even know.
And yeah, and actually, the thing about it, yeah, I love the score for this. It's great. And I think even though Ennio Morricone had been nominated for several Oscars for best score, I think this is the only one that he won.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting too? Richard Brown says The Thing, done as a Western. Which it kind of is, I guess.
I mentioned this in the program.
Is that actually Ennio Morricone did some music for The Thing.
Okay.
And there were three songs that he did that they didn't use in the movie, but Quentin Tarantino used them in this movie.
Okay.
And then, so they're still Ennio Morricone, but they were originally composed for The Thing.
There's basically a shout out to The Thing in the movie. I'm watching it, and the stagecoach driver,
OB,
if you look at him, he's wearing the same outfit as Crustle was wearing in The Thing. That's MacReady's fucking helicopter pilot outfit.
Yep.
He had the big hat, Smokey the Bear hat, so he didn't have the front of it pulled up. And he had the little glasses with the side protectors. And that bomber jacket, it was a lot like a bomber jacket. And the same beard and everything. And you go, so the stagecoach driver in the fucking snow is also MacReady in the snow flying the helicopter.
Yeah.
So I saw that.
But he did use music from The Thing. Music that was initially composed for The Thing, but they didn't use it in the movie.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But it was still Ennio Morricone. But this was actually, I think this also, even to this present day, is the only movie that had, the only Quentin Tarantino movie that had an original score composed for it. Because usually he does, you know, music, like he picks like old music.
Yeah,
like,
I'm
to
watching
put in there.
It. You know, I didn't know any of this. Jenny did, you know, I'm just watching these things like a normal person. Jenny come back and do all the investigation of who did what. But no, I was calling it. I was going, that's an epic fucking score. I didn't realize it was the same dude that did all the spaghetti
Western. Well, I told you though, because his name came up on the credits,
I guess,
and I told you.
I guess it didn't register.
And I was like, oh, it's Ennio Morricone.
Okay, I didn't know who you were talking about.
I don't know who that is. Oh,
I don't know
who
that is.
I thought you knew who that was.
I don't know who that is. And I was just going, man, this is a fucking badass score, and that's what makes a really good Western. And some of some of Clint Eastwood's movies had good enough score. You know what I mean? They didn't have an epic score. It wasn't like an Italian score. The Italians understand fucking epic opera shit. You know, they know how to write music for that. Oh, they got a long heritage of it in their theaters. So, but even High Plains, not High Plains, what was it? High Plains Drifter and fucking Pale Rider. They had decent scores. They also feel Outlaw Josey or Wales. They weren't quite as epic as Italian, but they were good enough.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say something else.
No, why would I say anything else?
Well, I don't know.
Okay. Jenny's doing that.
I never know when you're done talking.
No,
because sometimes I think you're not talking, and then you just keep talking.
No. No.
So it's like I'm always kind of waiting. It's like, is he done talking? I'm not sure, because I'm never sure. But I want to say, too, that this was shot in 70mm. So it's just like the old school, like movies from the 50s and stuff that were like that wide, wide, wide screen.
Yeah.
He went back old school because he wanted it to be like this big, huge, like epic kind of thing. You know what I mean? This was, I think originally, this was supposed to be, he initially conceived it as a sequel to Django Unchained, which had come out in 2012, right?
I haven't seen it.
And yeah, I don't think I've seen Django Unchained either now that I'm thinking about it. But this was supposed to be a sequel to that, and he was going to write it as a sequel, and then he was going to do, like, a novel. And so what ended up happening, though, was that the script for this movie kind of, like, leaked out. And so he's like, well, shit, now I'm just going to do it a novel. But then he's like, you know what, fuck it. And then he just, like, changed it around a little. And I think that he thought maybe that even though I think the Samuel L. Jackson character was supposed to be kind of, like, I don't know. I think it was supposed to be like a continuation of what happened in Django Unchained, but then he decided it would be, you know, that it was going to be too different. So it was going to be like a standalone, but he definitely wanted to do another Western. He said that he got the idea for this, not necessarily from spaghetti Westerns, but he said like from those old Western TV shows, like the Big Valley and stuff. He's like, they'd always have, or the Virginian or whatever. He's like, they'd always have on those shows, there'd always be like one or two episodes where all the good guys would be, like, you know, kind of taken hostage, or, like, they would all be trapped in this place, like, with all these other guys that you didn't know if they were good guys or bad guys. And he's like, so I wanted to do a movie like that, but where everybody in it was, like, a bad guy, and you didn't know who was telling the truth and who was lying, like, at any time. And so it also had that kind of, like, whodunit, like mystery kind of aspect to it, because there comes that thing, like, if you haven't seen it, where they're all trapped in this, you know, place. It's like a lodge or something like that, and they're all trapped there because of a blizzard, and, you know, they're all kind of bad people, you know what I mean? Or, you know, varying degrees of bad, I guess.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to see Django's Unchained. They're talking about it in the comments section. Yeah, I'm gonna have to see that now. I didn't know that I didn't know that Tarantino made real good westerns, but it was a pretty good western, man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a gorgeous looking western. It's just, like I said, it's just this wide sweeping, like, epic.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like Jeremiah Johnson level.
Yeah,
shit, it's like something out of Jeremiah Johnson. Good movie.
And I liked too. We were talking about this while we were watching it. Tom's like, I like that he kind of showed, I think that maybe a couple people that saw it, like, thought that it went on too long, like, some of the sequences went on too long. Like, for example, when they were, you know, taking the horses off the carriage, or, like, doing the line out to the outhouse and the stables and stuff like that in the middle of the blizzard and everything like that. But Tom was like, well, I kind of like that they're showing that, because, like, a lot of westerns, they don't show, like, what a pain in the ass everything used to be back in the old days, and, like, how fucking long everything took.
Yeah.
Because that's the one scene where the blizzard is coming, and they're like, well, we better, like, lay a line out to, so we can get to the outhouse and we can get to the stable and feed the horses and stuff like that, like, without blowing away or getting lost or whatever.
Yeah, if those of you don't know me, I grew up in the horse industry. My mother's a pretty famous trainer. And when me and Jenny met, at that time, I was taking care of a rich guy's fucking barn. And that was some of the things that I'd do in between other military-type jobs is be a ranch hand. So I just grew up doing that, feeding, taking care of horses, and people don't realize how labor intensive it is, man. It's not like a car where you can just park it and walk away from it. Gotta clean stalls, fucking pick hooves, fucking grooming, medication, feed up, turn out, wash rack. You know, they're a living creature. You gotta be on them all the time. And under those conditions that they were showing, blizzard coming, if you didn't take steps, you'd lose some horses. They'd freeze to death in that, you know. So, but they would have had the equipment around, keep those horses, blankets and stuff, putting big blankets on them. They probably would have patched everything up so there wouldn't be any wind blowing in. That was one of the things I was looking at where they were living, man. The cracks in between the damn boards, wind would have been blowing right through that thing. Yeah. In one shot, I saw it. It was like, I don't know how accurate that was. They knew how to build buildings back in the 1800s. They were, you know, they didn't have central heating and air, so they knew how to get airflow or shut it off during the winter. They knew about insulation, too. So it was maybe might have just been for effect, you know. I mean, that looked like a pretty well-built building.
Well, we don't know how long that building's been there. It's like, you know, maybe they, you know, maybe they don't get a lot of people in there. They don't have a lot of money to, like, fix shit up or something like that.
It looked like an eighth of an inch difference in between all the boards on the walls at one shot. I don't know. Might have been just an illusion of the camera. But did you see what I was talking about?
Yeah, that's what you're talking about.
Okay.
But, yeah, they, because I was watching it and I'm sitting there going, because you know how a lot of times, like, when you see a movie and you can tell that the snow is not real, you know what I mean? And you can tell that it's not really cold, too. Like, I feel like it's better now because at least you can, like, add some shit in digitally later on. But even then, it still kind of looks fake. So I'm, like, watching this going, that does absolutely not look fake. That is all real snow. And that it actually looked like a real blizzard. I'm imagining it was not.
Yeah.
But it looked really good.
Yeah.
Everybody looked like they were freezing their fucking balls
off. The outside shots, yeah.
But like I said, so I looked it up, because like I said, it's supposed to be Wyoming, but they actually did shoot it in Colorado. So the weather, you know, they're like, yeah, we're going to shoot it like right in the middle of winter, I guess. But I mean, it looked really realistic, I thought. Because you can really tell that fake snow, like, looks really, really bad.
And then that carriage. the shots of them inside that carriage.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of cool stuff kind of happens, you know, picking guys up on the side of the road and not being able to trust them and tell them to put their guns on the ground. And then wanted to handcuff them, you know, when they were coming into the carriage. They had to strap the frozen dead guys to the top of the carriage.
I love that.
There's just a lot of cool little details that are included in the story, because, you know, Victorian era Wild West life was rough, man. You had to do shit like that. It was very manual. You couldn't just get on your phone and call for help. You couldn't you know, just put some fuel in a vehicle and just drive it. You know, it wasn't that easy.
Yeah, I mean, everything is like journey. So much easier nowadays. I can't imagine how much fucking, and you know, it's like I go through shit nowadays where it's like, man, that's such a pain in the ass to do this, that, and the other thing. But it's like back then, holy crap, it's like, how the fuck did they get anything done?
Yeah.
Everything must have taken forever.
Nowadays, you can get into a car in the dead of winter, turn the damn air conditioning on, get it hot in there, and drive around in your t-shirt and total comfort inside that vehicle. Man, it was never like that. It actually wasn't even like that in the 1920s. You'd been freezing your ass off in that fucking car.
Well, yeah. Well, you can see it happen now. Like, sometimes if it's the middle of winter somewhere where it gets really cold, like in Michigan or something, and the power goes out, like, people actually absolutely do freeze to death.
Yeah.
Like, inside their houses. It happens all the time. Or, like, you know, homeless people and stuff. So I do kind of feel like, but yeah, you can definitely tell this was shot somewhere where it was actually really cold.
He did a good job. He did a real good job of making a real Western.
And like you said, it's, you know, it's Tarantino-esque, so it's over the top, and it has some kind of like ridiculous kind of elements to it.
Yeah,
but that's
so the dialogue's
kind of
ridiculous, but
that's
his style.
That's his thing. I mean, that's what you watch a Tarantino movie.
If you think a Sergio Leone movie isn't ridiculous, you need your fucking head checked.
Yeah,
all kinds of shit would happen in Sergio's flicks that couldn't have happened in real life. But you're enjoying the movie, you know.
Yeah.
And the movie still comes off as epic and important. What was a little bit different about this is they're basically snowed in, so it's all, a lot of it is taking place just in one room.
Yeah.
Which I guess that does save on some money, but they didn't scrimp. I mean, you know, it's shooting outside with horses and in the snow and everything. That's fucking tedious.
So, it's a massive cast.
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, it's a big cast.
So, yeah, it's still a good movie.
I think this cost about, I've seen $44 million and I've seen $65 million. So somewhere in that range, that's where, you know, that's how much it costs to make. Which actually I would have thought it was would have been more, but I guess not.
Yeah, it looks more expensive than that. But like I said,
yeah, it does.
Most of it's dialogue, too. It does have good dialogue. Everybody's telling their own little story, pretty much. And there's kind of morality tales into what they're talking, and then, you know, it affects the destiny of each one of these characters, and you know, spoiler alert, everybody dies in it.
Pretty much. Yeah, I mean, they kind of do, don't they?
I think everybody dies
in it. Now that I'm thinking
think
about it,
survived.
I don't think anybody got away.
No.
Did they?
No.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
But it does kind of divide into good guys and bad guys. Even though the good guys didn't like each other, you know. And they were all imperfect characters. There wasn't anybody that... you think there is one. You think Samuel L. Jackson's character is like a stand-up good dude. You find out later, he's a liar.
Yeah.
He's a liar. He's a liar, and he was a coward. Well, he was a coward in the service. Got run out. They ran put a yellow stripe up his back and ran him out. But he wasn't a coward in real life. He was still a fucking badass bounty hunter, you know. I don't think they gave the details of why they ran him out. Might have been a bum rap. You don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they did tell the story of him, like, burning down that prisoner of war camp.
That's right. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
They ran him out for that?
Yeah, was it for that, or was it for something else?
I don't think it was for that.
Oh, no, because I guess he had done something else, and then they imprisoned him in that, and then he escaped by, like, burning it down.
Yeah. Yeah, but then he eventually got, well, he was a prisoner of war and he escaped.
Yeah,
but his own army fucking ran him out as a coward.
Yeah,
and I don't think they told the story of why.
Yeah, did they? I don't remember if they did. I mean, maybe it's in the longer version,
maybe.
Because I know they shot a lot more
footage
for this. So, you know, I'm not really sure. And kind of the whole thing is about... I mean, it's, I kind of feel like the whole thing is about, one, coincidences. Like, because everybody, like, you know, meeting up people on the road, like, at this one little place, and everyone kind of knows each other. They don't know each other necessarily, but they know of each other. Like, hey, you're that famous, you know, gang leader, or you're that famous bounty hunter, or whatever. So it's like everybody knows who everybody is, but even though they've never actually met each other, mostly. But it's also about... kind of, it's just a lot of it is about the stories that people are telling each other. And there's kind of a thing too, like, where you're never entirely sure if, like, what the story they're telling is bullshit, or, like, for example, the story that Samuel L. Jackson's character tells to Bruce Dern's character about his son, like, what he made his son do, like, before he killed him and shit like that. It's like, did that really happen, or was he just telling him that, like, to get a rise out of him?
The Confederate guy was
saying... You don't know.
The Confederate guy was saying, man, he's lying. Don't listen to him. You know what I mean? He didn't do that. But he just wanted to shoot him. Remember, he just wanted to shoot that dude.
Well, yeah, because it was a line, like, toward the beginning where they said, oh, you're going to shoot an unarmed old man, and that's why he put that gun there next to him, like, and he didn't give it to him or nothing, he just put it there, and then, like, he started fucking... Then he started fucking with him, like, saying all the shit that he would, like, did to his son.
Yeah.
Like, making him walk out there naked and, like, making
him... Yeah, because his son was trying to collect a bounty on him. There was, the Union had a... Or the, was it the... No, the, yeah, the Union still had a bounty on him, wasn't it? Or no, the Confederacy had a bounty,
On him, a bit. Well, they said that at one point, like, the bounty was, what'd they say? It was, like, some ridiculous amount, like, 30,000. But, yeah, but by the time the sun was, like, it was only 5,000. But, I mean, still, $5,000 was nothing to sneeze at.
All that
then.
Stuff's kind of accurate. After the Civil War, ex-Confederate soldiers still did a lot of shit. Like, Jesse James was robbing banks, and... He seemed to have been maybe saving up money to try to start another rebellion. I don't think it was the lost cause. I don't think it would have happened. But ex-Confederates were doing things like trying to take revenge on people that they had beef against still during the war. That did go on. And the Lee family ran to Brazil. Their descendants are still in Brazil. A lot of people don't know that. There's a damn Confederate colony in Brazil. It's been there since the 1800s. They speak English and everything. Yeah,
I was going
to tourist attraction.
Yeah,
Brazilians go there to see it.
Well, yeah, I could
several hundred of them. But,
say hey, Jen's here. Oh, hey, how are you doing? I think this is the first time you've ever.
Yeah, Jen. Okay, that's
because Dimitri comes into the chat sometimes.
Yeah,
every now and then.
Yeah,
but this is, I think this is the first time we've seen you in the chat though. So hey,
I've showed pictures of Jen before from the club. Jen's the singer from 13th Angel. Yeah, she her husband is a DJ at the club we hang out at.
Yeah.
Dimitri.
Yeah. He's in here every now and then, but I haven't seen him in here for a while.
Yeah, y'all need to come over once I get everything all hooked up in here. Got to get a damn bar built over here in this living room, this top living room.
One of these days.
Yeah, once I get the money.
Yeah. Dominic says, have you seen The Big Silence, the film this movie is heavily influenced by? I don't think I ever have, actually. I don't think I ever have. But yeah, like I said, I was just reading something earlier about how Tarantino was using a lot of the TV westerns, like, as a kind of thing. But I don't know. Just everything about this is fucking great. I don't like it as much as Pulp Fiction. But I think that's just mainly because westerns aren't usually my thing. But I don't know. There's a really lot about, it's like, all of the characters in this are good. Like, all of their interactions are good. Like, the funny thing about it, though, I kind of feel like there's, like, this kind of, like, humor kind of thing where they keep repeating the same line over and over. Like, this kind of, like, dry, like, a letter from Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
President Abraham Lincoln. Like, they say it, like, five or six times.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, and, like, after a while, I was like, it's kind of not funny, but then, like, it keeps going, and then it's funny again. I don't know what it is.
Well, they were joking around, too.
Right, right.
The characters were joking around. So I think it was cool, you know? I think it's decent dialogue. Some of that stuff, though, kind of rings true because they didn't have internet back then. They didn't have television or even radio. So they would go to saloons and bars and just talk about people and tell stories. And they would keep track of people. I mean, a lot of the stuff from the old West, those gunfighters, their legends lived on because people talked about them. And yeah. People wrote stuff in newspapers about them. And so they were gossiping motherfuckers. That's what they did.
Well, yeah, humans are gossiping yeah. motherfuckers.
So there's something to this concept of, like, oh, you're that guy? Oh, yeah, I heard about you. There should have been, there was probably a lot of that. Because the population density was low. Real low. So if you went into your bar, that might include people from 30 miles around, maybe 40 miles.
Yeah, because this might have been like the only place, you maybe, know?
Yeah, the only one, you know?
Well, and that seems to be the case here because the place they all end up at, Minnie's Haberdashery, you're kind of led to believe that this is kind of the main place everybody stops on the yeah. way to Red Rock, which is like on the way to the next big town, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So everybody stops at this place like to get food and, you know, sleep and booze or whatever, like you can get everything there. So I guess that's kind of why that happens and everybody just kind of goes there because it's like famous. But I don't know. I just really liked the mystery aspect of it too. Like I had forgotten, because like I said, I never actually saw this whole movie all the way through. Like I had just seen parts of it. And I kind of just remembered it being like a bunch of them just trapped in the lodge or whatever, and them like, you know, shooting each other, which they do, but it's, I forgot that there was like a mystery aspect to it, like somebody poisoned the coffee and they're trying to figure out yeah. who was working with who and who was making shit up and who wasn't who they said they were. So it's almost kind of like a Agatha Christie, like a parlor kind of mystery, yeah. but like in a Western setting, which actually is like a kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, that's also something that they would have done. That's Victorian era.
Yeah.
They had, you know, detective stories and everything. So, you know, that would have been part of their skill set. Well, he did that. And, you know, you got to understand there was no professional law enforcement. You know, you just had to, you had to reason it out, you know. And that's what they did. They were talented. You know, those characters are pretty talented.
I also
figured out who it was that poisoned that coffee.
I also liked, too, that the movie for, like, the first, for like, a, you know, 90% of it is with like the people like talking and just doing shit like that. And then like in the last 15 minutes, it just goes batshit gory. Like people like yeah. fucking blowing each other's nuts off and like cutting each other's arms off yeah. and shit like that. It's like fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. But yeah, I just really liked all. And I think Nicotero and them.
Yeah,
K&B did the gore for this because it is like pretty gory.
And it's up there with when you think about it, you go, well, you know, that's kind of Quentin Tarantino doing his thing. That's also homage and stuff that from that time.
Yeah,
stories of Jeremiah Johnson are fucking off the wall. That he gets captured by the Crow, and while they got him, the Crow are trying to sell Jeremiah to another tribe who wants him dead. He overpowers one of the Crow dudes and fucking kills him. Cuts his leg off. The leg uses that leg to beat another Crow to death. All right. To escape the cap.
That never fails.
And then walks over like 150 miles through the snow with that leg gnawing on it for nutrition to make it. And that is a real Jeremiah Johnson story. Okay? It probably didn't happen. Those dudes,
probably not.
Those dudes lied. They told all kinds of stories. You know, even the whole Jim Bowie, you know, with the Bowie knife thing. They say Jim Bowie was a liar, too, that he killed a grizzly bear with that knife, you know what I mean, in a fight, and just all kinds of shit that he was.
I mean, it's possible, it's just unlikely.
He got in those bars, and he would fucking drink, and they'd fucking lie and tell stories. But I think that was just part of the West skill set, was to be entertaining, you know. And if you were to tell some big old fucking lie, I think that the audience just like appreciate it. Yeah, that's a pretty good lie. That's a good. It's like watching a movie.
Yeah, because they didn't have movies back
yeah,
then.
Didn't have a, yeah, that,
well,
yeah,
didn't we
yeah.
talk about this a little bit when we were talking about? Yeah. I guess when we were talking about the Tombstone, the movie Tombstone, yeah. right? Where it's just kind of like, I think wasn't it Tombstone that we were talking about? Where one of the themes like behind the thing was, you know, the difference between like real shit and like the romanticization, the, you know, the way it's romanticized. I guess, no, that was Unforgiven, not Tombstone. What am I talking
about?
Yeah,
Unforgiven.
Yeah, it was Unforgiven. Like how a lot of the stories are like romanticizing But a lot of the, like, truth about it was, like, not
No, as glamorous. Was fucking dirty ass shit,
as it sounded.
It was crime.
Right. So it was like, I think this one is kind of like playing with the similar idea, but it's just going balls to the wall. Yeah, we're just going to go, like, just over the top, like the stories back then would have been.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, we're going to blow off somebody's face and, like, blow off somebody's nuts and...
Yeah.
You know, yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh cuts off Kurt Russell's arm, like, to get the fucking cuffs off her and shit like that.
So I'm watching it, you know, and I'm watching Tarantino do his thing, you know, but I was going, this kind of checks out, though.
Yeah.
It kind of checks out with the gestalt of the time, because they would tell tall tales, and they cussed, too. I think the cursing in there is probably pretty accurate.
Oh yeah, I imagine so.
It's just they didn't write curses down, but evidently, you know, they did say, "Oh yeah, this dude would cuss and this and that," you know, fucking. And they never really tell you what it was, but it's probably shit like that, you know. You suck my cock, that kind of stuff, you know. But you know, so I think that's probably the way it was, and no, I think he did a good job. I think he did a good job.
Ben says, Tarantino gets to indulge his pathological hatred of New Zealanders as well. He did the same in Death Proof. Yeah, there was that one character that she was only in it for like a few minutes. Yeah. She was like in the flashback.
Yeah.
Judy.
Yeah.
Like, what was she called? Six Horse Judy or something like that?
Yeah, she's just this cute chick that just gets blown up. He doesn't like New Zealanders?
Well, I guess because that character in Death Proof, too, she was also New Zealand.
Okay.
Tom Sykes says, if you tie a Bowie knife to a stick and use it as a spear, you could totally kill a bear with it.
Yeah. No, I think the story he told is that the bear was on top of him and he was sitting there and he cut its throat and was stabbing it to death and he survived it. I think I might be getting confused with Daniel Boone or Davy Crockett. I think that might have survived a bear attack. But I could have sworn that Jim Bowie also would tell all kinds of lies. Because he would sell those knives, evidently.
Well, yeah, so you gotta have a good story to go with the shit.
Right.
I mean, they knew that stuff way back then.
Even though my understanding is that his knife wasn't all that unique. That it was pretty much like all the other knives.
Even more reason why you have to have like really cool story to go with it. Right. Because otherwise everybody would be like, well, why would I want that one? It's just the same as the other ones.
Yeah, they carried big knives, big survival knives. A lot of them. So.
Yeah, Sly also brought up The Big Silence. And it's kind of the same thing. He said, unforgiving, snow-swept frontier, group of bloodthirsty hunters led by a vicious... Ooh, Klaus Kinski is in it. So we might see that. And a score by Ennio Morricone also.
Yeah, okay.
Tammy said, Davy Crockett killed him a bear when he was only three. That's right. He did. Yeah, what you were saying before, like, with this movie about the swearing, was that, you know, not only, like, Tarantino just, he loves the N-word. He loves to put as many instances of the N-word as he can in the movie. I don't remember if somebody counted this one, but I saw a video earlier that they did like a little kind of like review of it. And then at the end, like as a funny little thing, they took every single incident of somebody saying that in the movie and like replaced it with a different word.
Yeah.
So it'd be like every time somebody said, and it was just like random ass words like teacher or hippopotamus or something like that, and it was like so fucking funny. Like the way it was edited together was like hysterical.
I got a feeling that's how they talked though.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it's just kind of like it sounds, you know, it's tacky, indulgent.
It's very tacky by today's standards, but that's probably how they talk.
Thinking that while I was watching the movie. It's like from our point of view, it sounds like really excessive, but I'm like, that's probably how people talked back then. It might be like a little overblown, but probably not by that much. Now that I'm thinking about it. Richard Brown did not like The Big Silence. He said it was actually quite boring. Ben said, my dear old grandmother thought Bowie knives were invented by David Bowie. Are we absolutely sure that they're not? Dave is here. Hey, what's going on? The Ridiculous Six came out after Hateful Eight. how are you doing? So, wait, what's today? It's Tuesday, right?
Yeah.
Camp Guy said, I had to exchange words for the N-word when I was reading Huckleberry Finn to my kids. Did you do a different word every time, or did you say, Or did you like come up with the same word? That's like pretty funny. Cause like, yeah, the video, I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Joe Blow or somebody like that. But cause he started out like words that kind of sounded like that, like neighbor and stuff like that. But then like, as it went on, it was just like random ass fucking words. And it was just, and there were so many that it was just like funny, like seeing like each word that he came up with all the time. I'm like, holy shit, that must've taken forever to edit that shit together. But yeah, so we watched this on Netflix, and Netflix has both versions. It has the theatrical cut. Now, like I said, even when it came out in the theater in 2015, Tarantino, he had done a 3-hour and 2-minute a roadshow version that he kind of like toured around where... Because some theaters aren't really equipped like for the 70mm, like the super wide widescreen. So he did it for that. That version, and then he did like a regular theatrical version that was 2 hours and 47 minutes, and that's the version that we watched. But Netflix also has that they did in 2019, if you don't know, and it's called The Hateful Eight Extended Version, and they actually broke it up into 4 or 5 episodes. Mm-hmm. Something like that. I think it was like 4 or 5 episodes, and they're each like 53, 54 minutes long, and they must have added like a bunch more footage, and I think it was like, I don't know if it's all re-edited or if it's rearranged. This movie, it's mostly, because I feel like Tarantino loves like putting stuff, like stuff is not in chronological order. This one actually takes place almost entirely in chronological order until you get to the last chapter, like it's done in chapters, yeah. And then you get to the last chapter and then they do like a flashback. But it's not like Pulp Fiction where it's just like all this stuff like happening at different time frames and, you know, overlapping and shit like that and being like nonlinear. It's not, it's, this one's kind of like pretty much chronological until you get to the end and then you flashback and it's like, oh, this is what happened before they got here, you know what I mean? But other than that, you know. But yeah, I mean, like
it's
I said,
a great movie, man. I'm going to put it up there with some of my favorite westerns. It's a good western. Sam Jackson knocks it out of the park. Crustle, knock it out of the park. Who's the third guy? The guy from Predators. What's his name?
Wait, I have it. What is his name? Goggins? Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins, yeah.
Yeah,
he was good in it.
Oh,
he,
can I say that
he's real good in it.
I loved Tim Roth in this.
Yeah.
He was fucking great. He's the hangman.
Yeah, he was good. He's real good. I loved Tim Roth
anyway.
Everybody was good in it. Dern was in it. That wasn't what
Bruce Dern was in it.
Bruce Dern was in it. Yeah, he was good in it. Just
Michael Madsen was in it.
Yeah,
from Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, he was in it. It just everybody did a great job in it. And yeah, what's his name? Gaggins? No.
Goggins. Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins. He does a great job.
That's his name.
Yeah, his accent's okay. He does a pretty okay southern accent. It's pretty good. But I like the character that he played. He was great in Predators as the damn guy on death row.
I kind of feel like Predators, man, it's like that was actually like a really good
It's
movie.
Aged real well. That's my second favorite one. That Predator.
Yeah, mine too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's aged real well. And he is just great in that one too, man. He's like, man, when I get home, I'm going to rape me some bitches. The other guy goes, yeah, man, 4 o'clock, bitch raping time. Yeah, I'm going to rape me so many bitches. Yeah. It's fucking funny, man. I ought to see that again, man. I want to see Predators again.
Bitch raping time.
Yeah, 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Right after tea.
I want a gun. Give me a gun. You got 2 guns, Mexican. Remember that guy? Yeah.
Strawdog78 said Walton Goggins was awesome in The Shield, which is a TV show. Like I said, I kind of feel like he's been in a bunch of movies, but I feel like he's mostly known for being in kind of like I said, like prestige TV shows. It's like I said, I think he was in Justified too as well.
Yeah.
But I've seen him in a bunch of stuff.
I liked him in Predators, but this role is a lot bigger. He's got a lot more lines and everything. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, he's like a main character in this one, big time.
Yeah.
Like he's probably...
When this movie came out?
2015.
Okay.
So it's not that old.
It's not that old, yeah.
It's old, what, is that 7 years?
7 years, yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, for some reason, I thought this was older than that. Yeah. Maybe I was thinking of Django Unchained. That was 2012.
Now I want to see that one.
Yeah.
I think they're showing that for free.
I think the... you check Netflix, because I think they have a bunch of Tarantino movies on there.
Yeah.
Tom Sykes says, Walton Goggins blows his head off in an episode of In the Heat of the Night. So there you go. Mm. And Camp Guy said he was actually from the South, so he has a natural accent.
Okay, so that's why.
Richard Brown said, have you seen Bone Tomahawk? Yes, several times. We actually did a review of it probably a couple years ago.
Bone Tomahawk
is fucking great. I love Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, Western horror. Yeah, good movie.
Yeah, it's basically like a straight up Western until like the third act, and then it goes full on fucking survival horror.
Yeah.
It's great.
Cannibals. Yeah.
And that one scene, if you know you've seen it, you know what we're talking about. That one scene is like probably one of the most the nastiest fucking thing you're ever gonna see. Ben says Django Unchained is pretty good. It's a revenge fantasy of Jews and blacks massacring plantation owners. what I figured.
That's what it is, dude.
Yeah. You know. Well, just kinda like Inglourious Bastards was kind of like, you know, a Nazi killing.
I got it.
Fantasy, like, you know, burning Hitler and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so Ben says time to split. Yeah, I kind of feel like Tom's getting all
antsy.
So
I'm cooking downstairs.
That's right. I keep forgetting. But yeah, so tomorrow's Wednesday, which means that tomorrow night is our, you know, big show. Yeah. And because, you know, it's almost Christmas time, we're going to do like kind of a Christmas special. And so the patrons voted on tragedies that happened at Christmas. So it'll be like a Christmas special, but it'll probably be kind of a bummer.
Christmas down.
But we'll do the fun Christmas show on Friday night because we won't have a topic necessarily. So we could just we have some cookies or some shit like that. But yeah, so I mean, we'll still try to have a good time with it, even though I was like doing the notes for it today and I was like, oh boy, this is going to be kind of depressing. Oh well. Maybe it'll make you feel like better about your Christmas. You know, just by like, well, at least that didn't happen to me. So you know what I mean? That's what I figured. All right. So hopefully everybody can come by and see us tomorrow evening for the main show. We're gonna have some drinks and we'll do some Christmas tragedies. It'll be super fun. So thanks for dropping by, everybody, and we'll see you guys again tomorrow.